I wanted to talk about some things from the Bible about and different things as well, just kind of a hodgepodge of a lot of things that I've studied, things that I've been exposed to. But it has to do with the concept of leadership. So I'm just going to call this biblical leadership. And I know I'll be like, well, I'm just right off the bat, I'm not involved with this because I'm not in a position of leadership, right? You say, well, I'm not a pastor. I'm not over a corporation, or, you know, I'm not in charge of anything. I'm not in a school as a teacher or an administrator or a principal or going on down the line of different things. I don't run this or do that. So I'm not a leader, so I don't have to listen to anything about this. Well, make sure at the outset you understand the difference basically between leadership and management. Everybody, and I tell the kids this quite a bit in school when I have to meet with them one-on-one and go over things with them and try to reinforce this with them, is that leadership, everybody is in one way or another a leader, especially when we talk about what that means. Now, management's a little different. You have to be in a position to be able to manage people, right? And that's the hard one. Managing people is one of those things that make you just want to take your vehicle and just drive right off the bridge. And I'm just kidding. It's not that bad, but sometimes it is. But it's not that bad. Anyway, managing people can be hard because I is one. Excuse my southern whatever that is. I'm a person. We're all people, and people sometimes are people. I don't know how else to put that. We all have this little issue called pride and selfishness that likes to come up, and we have to kind of, Lord, help me to squish that real quick. But that gets in a lot in the way of management and makes that difficult. I'm not going to talk about management. I'm going to talk because people in positions of authority are managers a lot of times, and they have to deal with issues and people and problems and set things in motion. But leadership kind of more on the side of the direction that things are going. I mean, imagine there being a big ship or a vehicle or whatever, and someone's in charge of the direction that boat is going. And so, yeah, they have to manage people to put them in the right place to get it going, but we want to go this way, and the word that we're going to look at, you all know the word, it's the word influence. I want to be able to influence people to go a certain direction. I tell young people many, many times, I say, some people obviously have personalities that are more susceptible to leadership or influence than other people. Some people are introverted. They're kind of they like to, you know, be alone kind of thing. I've told you about that before. I guess that's why my wife and I match pretty well, because we are polar opposites, if any of you haven't figured that out yet. My wife's idea of enjoying a break is sitting at home in her fluffy pants with her crochet hooks and her yarn, watching a show or something with a snack. Brenda, you got to have the snack, you know, chocolate, something like that, and just crocheting in quiet peace. She just would sit there for hours and just, she doesn't want, you know, that's just great for her. Me, I've got to be out going, doing. She tells me I'm a worm in hot ashes. I can't sit still, you know. So she says, tear the bedroom apart, Brother Grover, and put new flooring down. Well, and I tore the bedroom apart and did something. I'm regretting it now. I'm so tired. I need another vacation. But, you know, I'm got to be going and doing, and I'm kind of extroverted. So some personalities are, some people don't want to be in a position of having to manage or having to influence, but whether we like it or not, we have that capability to influence. Now, there's a lot of different definitions that we could look at, and of course, we're going to look at this word influence. If there's a book, if you wanted to have like a book definition, well, it's the influence is a relationship among leaders and followers that intend to have real changes that reflect a shared purpose. So we have a shared purpose, like I said, for example, we're in a boat, we want to get from point A to point B. We have a shared purpose to get there. So someone is going to influence everybody to make that happen. Okay? And so we have this, you know, idea of, and of course our world, I'm not going to get into the corporate things and all, there's models of leadership and weird names that are crazy models that you've never heard of before. And then they liken them to like different animals as well. And if any of you have ever studied leadership, it's kind of interesting. You know, you're a golden retriever or you're a lion or all this stuff, bear or whatever. I'm like, okay, I'm now a dog. All right. I guess that fits into our mantra of today. You can be whatever you want to be, I guess. But what kind of things is leadership not? And this might surprise you a little bit. Is it problem solving? Well, that person knows how to analyze something and fix a problem. You know, a lot of engineers are like that, right? Mr. Gamble and I like to try to solve problems. This is why we both like crossword puzzles, I guess. I don't know. We try to solve problems with vehicles. We try to solve problems with washing machines. And I enjoy that. I like, you know, Megan's washing machine broke last year. I said, you know what? I'm not going to go out and pay $700 for a new one. I'm going to try to figure out what's wrong with it. And I did. It was awesome. Took the whole thing apart. There was a bracket in the back that was broken. Of course, the way they engineer things, you have to take it all apart to find the one thing. My engineers are back there just receiving the checks. And us poor people have to try to figure out how to get around the hard things that they do. But there's always reasons, right, Mr. Opeger? Right, engineers start that way. You know, analyze something. Well, I can solve a problem, therefore I'm a leader. Is that true? Not necessarily. I'm in a position. Therefore, I'm automatically a leader. You know, sometimes people get put in positions and don't have the ability to influence or guide that ship in the shared purpose that it needs to go, whether it's a business or ministry or whatever it is. Or some people say it's power. You know, some people love having power. People in history, it seemed like they just craved power, like Hitler, I guess, would be one. He just loved having that power. And, you know, it's just, sometimes I kind of chuckle watching the videos. And he's like, you know, pounding on things. And there's millions of people out there, you know, like, good grief. The guy's like a, you know, like a god, or like, you know, Augustus in the book of Acts, you know, where he was all receiving all this glory, how great he was. And then he just kind of fell dead and the worms ate him. I mean, that's kind of, you know, some people think power, that's it. That's what leadership is. Or is it prestige? Prestige. You know, like a certain elite group, maybe they have a lot of money or multimillionaires or something like that. That doesn't mean you're a leader or your personality. Now, some of these things obviously are involved with being a leader or having that influence, but that doesn't necessarily mean if you have the personality for it, you may not be. You may be influencing people in the wrong direction. So I want to, or some people say this right here, it's related to outcomes. Well, that person was able to get us from A to B. Well, maybe they did, but they didn't do it in the way that would be the most efficient or the way that would work the best. And that necessarily doesn't mean they're a leader because the outcome came out. Maybe it was just accident that they accidentally got it to work out. So in order to be a leader, here's kind of the definition that I want to use right here. Influencing others, and here's the key as a Christian, for the cause of Christ. I tell the young people this quite a bit. Again, I have to get some of them and we have to talk one-on-one. Fun times. And, you know, some kids have the personality that people are just naturally attracted to them. Not in a, they're attracted to do what they do. They're attracted to follow them. They have that, you know, there's the popular or whatever it might be. With middle school, it's kind of crazy. It's, you know, there's some new thing popping up all the time with them. But, you know, I tell you, people say, look at how easily you are able to influence your classmates. For example, we stay with the school example here for a second. You do this, so then suddenly this whole group of boys does it with you. Right? That's influence. That's just that simple. It's influence. So are you using your influence for the cause of Christ, or are you using it for maybe the cause of you? Your own selfish ambitions or desires or what you have in your mind as the great plan of what you want to do. And so everybody has in one way or another the ability to influence people. You can be a dad or a mom at home. You don't even have, may not even have a job. You're influencing your children. You're showing leadership there. Is it going to be for the cause of Christ? Is it going to be for good, or is it going to be for those things that are evil? And so I want us to talk about a little bit about some leadership, a little bit of paradigms. Then we're going to talk about qualities of leadership that are found in the Bible. We're just going to go through some verses. This is probably going to take a while because I have like 12 or 13 of them. We're by no means going to scratch it. We'll just get started today. And then we have, if we have time over the time of the year, some examples of some leaders in the Bible that I want to look at. One of them that you may not even think about much that I've always been kind of drawn to and did some research on is Samuel, the prophet Samuel. You know, we aren't told a lot about Samuel during the time of his actual judgeship, but we have some things that are given. And it's interesting that how God used him as a leader in a specific time period where the nation was kind of doing their own thing, kind of like now, right? It's nothing new that nations, even if they have good beginnings, get to the point where they do what they want to do. It's happened. It happens in the Scripture. It's happened all over history. You shouldn't be surprised at it, but it does seem that as time goes on, the nations go deeper into new levels of evil, but we'll get to those things, I guess. So let's talk about a few things here, about some paradigms of leadership that leadership paradigms means an approach to leadership that some of them have kind of shifted over time, and there's dangers to both that we're going to show, and there's also some good things to both. For example, stability to change. So some people define leadership as just keep things stable. So if leadership changes from this person to this person, for example, just don't change anything. Don't, you know, rock the boat. Just keep everything the same. Keep everything the way it was. And, you know, they have this, you know, these corporations and things. And you can study a variety of, I think I did a study one time way back on, I think it was JCPenney. And when people, the way the guy founded it, and he made some, and then he made some changes as time went on that made him a very popular company. But then other people took over and made changes in the wrong direction. You see companies that rise and then they fall. Well, there's good things to stability. You need stability. But there's also good things sometimes to change, and then there's bad things to changing. There's good things to remaining the same, and there's bad things sometimes in certain areas of remaining the same. You know, you have to kind of adapt with things. I mean, you've got to update things, right? If you have a house or a car or whatever it is, you know, what do you have to keep doing? You have to keep fighting the old second law of thermodynamics, right? Entropy. Everything wants to go what? Less energy. Okay, less. In other words, you have to keep doing, you have to keep using energy so to prevent decay or whatever. So, you know, if you just left this room and, you know, you could leave this room alone and not step foot in it for about 2 weeks. And if you come back in, it's going to be full of dust everywhere. Like all the ledges, all the bays. And as a painter, those things drive me nuts. So I have these two boys that are high schoolers that have a job for the school. And they have little dust brushes. And one of their jobs is once a week, they dust. What are they doing? They're exerting energy. So you have to use energy to fight off entropy because, well, conservation, we'll get into that stuff. It's interesting. Things tend to naturally go down. So you have, you know, you got to fight that a little bit. You got to make some changes. You got to put some energy into something to keep it moving. But there's dangers to both. Here's another one. Control, and I don't mean empowerment in the way that our liberal friends think empowerment is. They think that everybody should be empowered and, you know, the multiculturalism that everybody should have that same access and empower people. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the idea of the Hitler style of management and leadership versus allowing people a certain amount of power, not in a bad way, to make decisions and do things and work together. There, you know, there's paradigms, and then it's shifted a lot. I know back in the, you know, if you study businesses, you know, I'm just from a corporate standpoint, if you study businesses back, you know, way back 60s and 70s, it was more of that, you're going to do it this way, jing, jing, and then nobody wants to work for that person like that anymore. It just gets, oh my goodness, you just get browbeat all the time. Versus, yeah, I'm going to give you the authority to do this, give you some power, some authority to make the decisions, and I'm going to hold you accountable for it. So we've seen that kind of shift as well, control to empowerment, but creating an environment in business even where, you know, nope, there's a lot of studies that have been done about job satisfaction. I'm not trying to get off onto the corporate world, but, you know, you want to be somewhat enjoyable. You want to enjoy your job at least somewhat, right? I mean, you know, no, you want to. I remember, you know, it's like the hi-ho, hi-ho, and you see the old movies where people are just like walking into the factory and day in, day out, stamp your time card. Do the same thing every day, go home, this is misery. You know, you want to be able to enjoy, at least in some aspect, what you do. So you have to perhaps change a little bit of that. Now, obviously, the danger to that is humanism can creep into any of these types of paradigms. You have to keep it biblical. But when we talk, again, a paradigm, how changes have happened, here's another one. Competition to collaboration. And again, I'm not talking about the worldly view of doing things. But this used to be the old versus kind of a different way that people have approached leadership and business. I'm talking about from that standpoint right now, just to show you. So competition would be like, you know, everybody's at each other's throats, right? So we're going to do this and this person's going to do this and whichever one wins, wins, and they're cutthroat. And so what do corporations do? They cheat each other. You know, you read about that. They destroy other people. They hurt their reputation just so they can be the one that rises to the top versus let's work together for a common purpose. Now, there's some merit to that. There's also some things you got to watch out for. But, you know, for example, if you do a project in college, I know I've talked to some of the more recent college graduates, and they talk about how they hated the fact that sometimes they had to do these college projects, and they got stuck with the bum in the class. You know what I mean? That's, they know is not going to do anything. And typically, they take the straight-A student, the good student, and put them with the really, really bad student. And so the really, really good student does all the work, and then they all get the same grade, right? So they kind of bemoan that. There's dangers to that. When we do little group projects here and there in school, like I've had them do science projects and do like a team of two or three, And I would let him do the project, and we go through the science fair, history fair, whatever. And then at the end, I say, all right, students, a week or so later, everybody get out a sheet of paper, and I want you to write down your name, and I want you to write down what you did in the project. Then I want you to write your classmate's name and write down what they did. It was always so fun to compare those. As you know, here's this student, and I know, put this work in, and the other student didn't do as much, but tried to make it sound like they did. I always loved those, comparing those. It made me chuckle. But you have to kind of watch those things, and then you adjust the grades accordingly. I never was one, all right, this project got an A, everybody gets an A. No, I did it per person. So there, you got to do it a certain way. But there is, for example, if we want, for all our teachers here, for example, and we have a goal, we have a shared mission that we want to educate these young people for the cause of Christ. We want them to know the Lord. We want them to know academics. We want them to have all these things to fulfill our mission statement. We all got to be on the same team. I'm not trying to sound cliché-ic, and I know this can get into the psychological. I'm not trying to go there. I'm just talking just real facts. We all need to be on that same idea of what are we trying to accomplish, and collaborating in that sense. Instead of, I'm going to watch for that teacher, and I'm going to do this. Competing teacher for teacher. No, it doesn't work that way. One person put it this way. I can't remember who it was. It was a famous guy that wrote in Leadership. They said, we're all on the bus, right? Talking about school. We're going to go in the same direction, but you got to get the right people on the bus and get the wrong people off the bus. Because we've all seen it in this ministry before, even in our ministry. If people don't have the same shared spiritual vision, does it work, Ms. Bepard? No. And sooner or later, it kind of, and they're kind of off. And fine, go where you're happy, no problem. But we're going to have this, our bus is going that way. All right, that's our spiritual vision and mission. We're going to go that way, so we're going to get the right people on and the wrong people off. But then once they're on, you got to get the right people in the right seat on the bus. And that's even harder, right? Yeah, this one doing this, and this one doing this, and make sure, because what's the overall goal? We got to collaborate in that sense. I'm not talking about the psychological weird progressive stuff. I'm talking about in the sense of we have the same vision for the Lord of where we want this operation to go. Again, don't misunderstand this. Uniformity to diversity. I'm not talking about, I'm not talking about the diversity of what they're trying to push today for the diverse cultures and genders and all. We're not talking about that, so don't misunderstand me. It's a shame that you have to kind of define your terms because the world has undefined them and redefined them. Diversity is not a bad word, but our world uses it in a way that we as Christians would not promote. But there's nothing wrong with diversity. We're all different. It's just reality. We're all different, and that's fortunate. I wouldn't want any of you to look like me. I'm glad y'all have hair. It's good. And you can laugh. Grover laughed because he and I are in the same boat, right, brother? Yeah. Us smart ones don't, I guess. I don't know. Daryl, right here, I'm telling you, see, there's a triangle right here that's got it pretty good. I do like that. So, anyway, you don't want everybody to look. I mean, some people have to be a little lower, Mr. O'Pager, and actually have hair. I'm just kidding. I joke with the kids because they like to joke with me about my lack of hair. So I say, look, it's simple science. Simple science. Hair. Exactly. You're on the right track, but it's not going to work out the way you think. Because hair is keratinized dead cells. So your brain cells are dying, being proteinized and keratinized, and you can see them. My brain cells are not dying because there ain't nothing coming out. So it's that simple. Grover, you can use that. I don't know if anybody... I'm Dr. Fauci. I have redefined science. Devin's the anatomy teacher. She's probably going to throw a hymn book at me. Anyway, Grover, you can use that for anybody that tries to... All right, yeah. Our brain cells are not dying, so it's good. Anyway, we're talking about diversity, not in that sense, but in the sense of you can do things differently. You can have some mixture. I'm glad for example, in our school, the variety of teachers we have, and they're all different. They all have their own unique personalities. They have a unique perspective of things they bring to the table. I don't want, I've seen this before, and I've heard even administrators brag about this, but I can walk between my four first grades, not that we have four first grades, we have two, and I can hear the teachers saying the exact same phrases at the same time. And I was like, I don't want to go to that school. That's robot. No, They're all on the exact same part, the exact same lesson. That's stressful, by the way. I'd hate to be a teacher in that mess. But, you know, that's what I'm talking about. It's all, what about, you can have diversity, and I'm not talking about a bad word, diversity. I'm glad that there is a variety of personalities. There's a variety of talents. There's a variety of gifts. And the reason I think that all the students are different, and I'm not, again, trying to use some psychological word, but one student might not connect well with that teacher, not in a bad way, they respect them, but they may be able to connect and talk to a different teacher about certain things. It's fine. And other students may talk to that one. There's diversity, there's difference, and God uses that to fulfill the same uniform purpose. So purpose doesn't change, but there can be difference. And here's another one. That was an old paradigm that, you know, leadership, management, it's all about me. It's all about me. I'm the one it's just recognize what I did. Recognize what I did. Self-centered. And I'm going to do things to try to get myself promoted, get myself recognized. And, you know, the world is doing all these things, trying to recognize people. Christians should think of a different thing. Again, what's the vision? What's the shared purpose? It should be a higher purpose. And of course, as we said, it's influencing others for the cause of Christ. But we should, as Christians, be able to tell others what that higher purpose of life is. It's not about me humanistically, because humanism is not just a philosophy. I think it's a religion where you worship man. You're worshiping yourself. Versus, we want to worship the Lord. That is the higher purpose. And that kind of goes along with this one. Hero to humble. So look at all the stuff that I did. Look at all the stuff that I brought to the table as a manager or a leader, and that's tried to promote this. What about humility? You know, I mean, the Lord Jesus is the prime example of humility. I mean, He was very God. If anybody had hero status, if you allow me to use that without being profane, but if anybody should be that, so the Lord, all that He did for us, all that He could do, His power and His might. But He lived in humility. He just, when people were going after Him and talking bad about, you know, this is a conviction to me, because, you know, when people talk bad about you, you get mad, don't you? I do. Am I the only one? You get upset. And then look what they said to the Lord. He said, Isaiah 53 says, yet He opened not His mouth. Boy, that's humble. That's humility. I look at that and I'm, Lord, we got a long way to go to get to that. Because we get upset, and, you know, it's part of our human fleshly nature, old sin nature, to protect and defend ourselves at all costs. And the Lord just said, whatever, they're going to say what they're going to say. They're going to say what they're going to say. I know what my purpose in life is to go and fulfill the will of the Father, and He did it. And He didn't get sidetracked about those things. So the idea of humility as a leader, whether it's, you know, and again, I'm not talking about humility in a way that you downplay your leadership and don't take a stand where you need to take a stand. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about doing things in a humble manner. You know, the way you do things really has a lot to say about how people respond to you. Again, I'm not trying to get psychological. But, you know, you can be rage and, you know, it's my way, I'm in charge. Nobody wants to follow a person like that. I'm sorry. I know I don't. And just, nobody wants to follow a leadership that is like that. But humbly working together, and He's not here, so I can talk about Him, I guess. One of the things that impressed me when I came here to this school 20 years ago almost, I can't believe it. I had hair a little bit, and I was young, and a lot skinnier. What happened to me? I got here and everything went downhill. What in the world? No. And I remember just, because I grew up in a situation where it was a lot of the hero and self-centered and control, if that makes sense. Okay? A lot of that. Control. I am the great leader. I am the great prophet. That kind of stuff. I grew up in that kind of type of situation. And when I came here, and there's Todd killing snakes on the playground, digging holes, plunging toilets, vacuuming up vomit, I was like, that's kind of weird. He's the preacher. He shouldn't be doing that. That's what I'm talking about, hero to humble. That's what I mean. I'm not talking about some humility where you give up your leadership and turn all soft. And then, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you serve with people. You serve with them. It is so easy to just, well, you know, whatever, pass the buttons. I'm just going to sit in my ivory tower. Serving together goes a long way with people. It's a lot easier to serve with people like that and to follow them, isn't it? Isn't it? Because you know they're right in the trenches with you. Yeah, they're going to make some decisions, and you may not understand some of the decisions they make, but you're right there with them. And boy, you will have some support right there. You'll have a team that will follow you. You'll have a team that you will serve the Lord and get the ship going in the right direction and accomplish the influence for the cause of Christ that we've been talking about. So let's look at some qualities. I'm not wanting to get too sidetracked, but you know me, I do. Let's look at some qualities, and I'm going to give probably, 12, 13, maybe some more if I keep studying. It's like maybe if I go back to painting a little bit more, Brother Grover, I'll think of some more things because, you know, that's what I do. I'm good at that. So if you ever see me painting up here at the school, don't come. I'll put you to work. I think of all kinds of new things to do, and then poor Grover falls into the trap, and Linda's like, where's my list? You need to hurry home. No. Adam's got me up here slaving. I don't know what to do. Just kidding. Well, I love Brother Grover. We have a good time. Anyway, I want to look at some qualities, and here's the first one. The first and second one kind of go hand in hand, but this one to me is so important. It's the word integrity. It's the word integrity. If you want to have influence, whether it's with your children, again, you can be a leader at home with your kids. Whether it's in your job, oh, I'm not the manager, I'm not in charge, but you still can influence people. As a worker, you still can do that. Or whatever the situation is, maybe you are actually a leader in your job or a man, whatever it is, you have the ability to influence, and you will not do it if you don't have integrity. If you don't have integrity. And I want to talk about that. I want to read a couple things from a book that I've read some interesting things about integrity. So in many leadership studies, there have been for probably 25, 30 years, people have been doing studies on leadership. So what they do is they'll survey workers in corporations. I'm talking like thousands upon thousands of surveys. They gather data. They've even come up with, there's a really good book I've read before called The Leadership Challenge, where they surveyed over 25 years. They surveyed thousands of people and corporate employees and came up with what are the top, you know, five characteristics that you value as an employee in your leader. Like, I want my leader to be this. And honesty and integrity was always, if not the first, it was like right up at the top. And that's stunning to me, even in a corporate world of, you know, unsecular, not necessarily Christian, whatever it is. That was one of the top things. I mean, nobody wants to work for someone that's a liar. Anybody like getting lied to? Now, I can put up with a lot of stuff, but I can't stand being lied to. It just honesty and integrity is one of those things that consistently appears as the most desirable traits that people want to see in their employers, their leaders, whatever it might be. So let's talk about what this is. Here's one definition. We'll look at several things. Being integrated, that means together. Integrated and grounded in solid moral principles and acting on those beliefs. Let's look at a couple passages real quick. Moral principles, by the way, first of all, that's tricky because now we're getting into an area or a mindset in our country even where what are moral principles? I mean, we got rid of this. This is laughed at. It doesn't matter anymore what this says. Well, this is where we find moral principles. And what is moral? The easiest way, I tell the kids, the easiest way to describe moral is right and wrong. It's that easy. What does the Bible say is right, and what does the Bible say is wrong? What does the Bible say honors the Lord? What does the Bible say dishonors the Lord? What does the Bible say will help you grow as a believer? What does the Bible say will hinder your growth as a believer? Even if you think it may not be necessarily right or wrong, it's a gray area, whatever. But what helps your growth as a believer versus what hinders your growth as a believer? What cultivates your flesh versus what minimizes your flesh and cultivates Christ? We should find those principles in the Bible. And I read another book recently, it's an excellent book written by Hegseth, I think is the name of the guy. It's a weird name. But he's talking, the title of the book just slipped me. Battling for the American Mind. That's what it is. Battling for the American Mind. Highly recommend it. Great book. He brought out a point that I never thought about before, because we always talk about, you know, principles, and we want to be principled. Well, he talked about how we use the word principle now, whereas in the olden times, my mom used to talk about the olden times, and I liked it. It's kind of cool. Olden days, I like it. They said we use the word values. It's interesting. He had a couple pages on the difference between values and principles. Maybe I'll share that sometime. It was very interesting. Values are deeper. Values are things that you value, you hold on to, you esteem as this is right and wrong. You know, things that should be honored as values in our country aren't anymore. Things like, I'm going to marry this woman and I'm going to stay with her. It takes values to do that. Right? Yeah, but she got mad at me and we argued. Okay. Work through it. You know, that happens. If you haven't argued with your wife, I guess I'm the only one. Whoever, we're laughing again. So anyway, you know what I'm saying? Why just done? You know what that young people do today? They just quit on it. They're done with it. We hit a snag. So? There's snags everywhere. Welcome to life. You got snags when you buy a car. You got snags at your house. The pipe's going to break. You got power. You're going to have problems all the time. Anywhere you go, any job you have, whatever you do with people, there's going to be problems because we're people. But values say, this honors God and I'm going through it. I was at breakfast yesterday with Bob, and there was a guy sitting there, an older man, and we didn't realize. He asked us one little question, then he talked for 25 minutes and we just sat there. Anyway, nice guy. But he talked about how he'd been married for over 50 years to his wife, 50 years, and had four daughters, and how, you know, he was an air conditioning contractor, and now his daughters have their own real estate. He just was going on and on about everything. I just needed somebody to talk to. But you don't hear that much anymore out in the secular world about, you know, I've been married 50 plus years. You don't hear about that much. We have some here in our church that we you know, honor and esteem that. It's great. It's a great testimony. But values say, keep going. Values say, I made a promise, I'm going to uphold it. It's that simple. Our world, I'll tell you, that just young people, and I don't fault the young people. Sometimes I think we look at the kids and we just get mad at them. I mean, you know, over at Milton High in public schools, or in Santa Rosa, some of them boys, they ain't saying, we're looking, we're mad at them. They've been taught this mess. They are 100% brainwashed. It has been more real to me this year than ever. They brainwashed them. They don't know anything different. It's easy to get mad at the kids. I'm furious at our society. I'm furious at the evil that has pushed this agenda in the textbooks and in the teacher colleges of this country for the past 40 years. That's now come to fruition. And we're just seeing it plain. It's frustrating. They have destroyed values in this country. So where, you know, we don't even know what principles are anymore. We don't know what moral beliefs, moral principles. Young people don't know them because their parents don't know them because they've never been taught them. It's sad. It's heartbreaking. I've had to learn to be a lot more patient with young people. That sounds weird, doesn't it? Had to learn to be a lot more patient. They have no idea. And it's, I was talking to, I think it was John. You and I were talking the other night. And he was talking about how even when you were in public school, way back, no. Sorry. I guess the 60s, maybe? When were you in the public schools? 70s? 60s, 70s? Even then. And that was the time where they were throwing out the Bible and throwing out prayer, but they still did things in their school. Pledge of Allegiances, and there was a sense of morality. Just general, no, I'm talking about in a secular world, a sense of morals. But, and I've mentioned this many times, they went after they got rid of the Bible, got rid of prayer, then they go after the family. And it's been destroyed. You don't need marriage. And what does marriage simply mean? One man with one woman. That's what it means. Period. A man and a woman that are committed to each other. So when you decide, well, I'm going to have a relationship with this woman, well, then I'm going to go off over here and have one with that one. Well, now you committed adultery. You're a fornicator in God's eyes. Well, I'm going to go. Well, now you're committing adultery again. And young people, and I'm not trying to be brash, but they're having relationships with girls all the time. They have no idea that in God's eyes, that's adultery. You chose that one. Now you're committing adultery. They have no concept of one man, one woman, loyal. Now back in the, even in, John and I were talking, in those days there was a sense of it. Moral. But we don't know anything about morality right now. No principles. They aren't being taught at all. So values have just been flushed down the toilet. So what do we have to do? We have to teach our children and our families, we have to re-emphasize to them the values that come from this book. That's why being in this is so important. Look at where you want your children to end up and think about the responsibility you have. That's scary. Scares me. So we're going to talk about integrity a little bit. I didn't get to go to our, maybe we have time just to quickly look at John 13, 17 and Philippians 4, 9, just real quickly. Because what we have as integrity and our principles should come out as we act on those beliefs. And you know this, for this is after the Lord did the washing of the disciples' feet and showed 100% servitude. Verse 15, I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant's not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, you've heard this verse, happy or blessed are you if you what? Do them. Now, I can sit here and know about, we've all met people that talk the big talk about integrity. Integrity. And then they act the complete polar opposite of it. Do they have integrity? No. Just because you talk about it doesn't mean you have it. Philippians 4:9, very similar concept, and we'll stop with this and pick up next week. I love this verse. To me, it's one of the great verses that we should use in education. Those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in Paul, do. It's that simple. A little two-letter word in English. Do. Act. Just act. You've heard it. You've learned it. You've seen it. You've received it. You know what the truth is. You know what the principles are. We've received them. We've been taught our whole life. We've been studying the Bible. You know what they are. Now, do. So if a leader does not have integrity, isn't doing wholeness, integrated, guided principles, all part of it, that's not going to be good leadership. So we're going to look at some of these qualities. We'll look at integrity. We'll look at that a little bit more. It's interesting, you know, because real quick, ethical principles are not flexible. You understand that? A lie is a lie. What was a white lie? Well, I don't care. It's a lie. It was only 25 cents I stole. Well, you still stole? Well, they didn't care. I don't care. They stole. I was like, Isaac, when he was a little boy, he was probably three or four years old. He was at Big Lots, I've told you this before, and he saw this bag of gold chocolate coins. He was like, man, and the bag was open. And so some of them had kind of fallen on the shelf. Well, he picked a couple of them up and put them in his pocket. I'm talking, he was like three or four. And mom didn't see it until we got home. He's in his room eating this. And she, where'd you get that chocolate? Well, I just got it at the store. Well, I was very upset. Maybe I overreacted, but I'm telling you, I was upset. And he got in big trouble for that. And I put him in my truck and I drove him straight back down to Big Lots. And I asked for the manager. And I said, my son has something to tell you. And he said, I took these two gold coins. The manager was like, oh. I said, uh-uh. He was going to pay for them. He's going to pay for them right now. And he was like, okay, yes, sir. Thank you very much. And took the money and we went on. Wow. Stealing is stealing. It doesn't matter. Ethical principles don't flex. Character is made, and Philip said this. He's a commentator. I got to stop. Commentator, and I'll come back to this. Commentator in the 1700s, I think. Great books that he wrote. He said, character is made in the small moments of our lives. The small moments. And here's another thing. We always say, well, hard stuff builds character. It does. But here's something else to think about the other side. Character is not created in a crisis. Character comes to light in a crisis. We got to think about that, our integrity. Oh, I got to stop. Father, just thank you for this time. And just help us as we go through these qualities that, not just for leadership, but they're good qualities for us in general in our Christian lives. And I pray we'd learn from them, be able to be more like Christ as we seek to influence people for your cause. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen. Thank you.